They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
It is the Day of Judgment. You know what that means.
Legion of Superheroes, number 263. Day of Judgment. Published May 1980. Written by Jerry Conway with art by Jimmy James. Synopsis. The villainous Dagon targets the Legion's families for revenge.
What we end up in this episode are two issues that go together. So that's not like we have a cliffhanger this week. It's not like we have a weird one-off issue that we have this week. We have a complete story told through two stories, or at least,
we still have a cliffhanger.
But at least we get somewhat of a self-contained story. And the other thing that we get in this story, which is something that I was talking about the last several episodes of this show, is that let's spend a little bit of time with Star Patrol. Let's spend a little time with Mystery Inc. And now we get to spend a little bit of time with the Team Terra. And so this time it's only focused on the Legionnaires that were left behind to rebuild the Legion HQ. And guess what, Matthew? The Legion HQ has been rebuilt. Hooray!
Yeah, and it's totally thrown aside as like, here it is in the first panel. But wait, who are these strangers in bondage gear?
I know. Let's look at the Legion roll call. This issue is going to feature Timberwolf, Brainiac 5, Princess Projectra, Phantom Girl, Starboy, and Mon-El.
No, it's not.
But it says right there in the roll call, this is the only way that I know who all these Legionnaires are, or else I'm going to mess up their names, as fans of this show have long figured out.
Well, the problem with this issue's roll call is that it's actually the roll call from issue 261, which, you may remember, was that space circus nonsense.
Yeah.
And so I was I think what they did was they pasted in the new roll call, the little scroll, and then never re-lettered it.
They may have. I have
Jack
no idea.
Harris it's messed up.
It's definitely an error, because I was going through this and I'm going, wait a minute, Brainiac 5 is not in this issue. There's no Princess Projectra in this issue. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, and I think the judgment is actually the judgment of readers on the Legion editorial team of this issue, because I know I'm judgy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We know that. So anyway, back to these adults that are wandering aimlessly through the halls of the new Legion HQ.
Five ordinary citizens with
the stiffest dialogue that you will ever cross.
Gosh, Steven, as you know, we've been recording this show for 20 episodes. Do you remember what happened with Omega?
Oh, yes, Matthew, I do remember there was a guy named Omega who did something horrible, but I can't remember what it was. Perhaps we can spend another few moments talking like this and trying to rehash the events of an issue from 20 issues ago.
Yes, this stiff dialogue is more powerful than Superboy or Mon-El, and succeeds in completely demolishing my interest in the story.
I agree. I'm sorry, let's do that at take two. I concur. This is going to be such a stiff issue and such stiff dialogue that I'm sure that I can build a back porch off of it. As they tour, so these are the parents. We find out these are the parents of the Legionnaires of this issue. So this issue, we've got Timberwolf's parents, Brainiac 5's parents, Princess Projector's parents, Phantom Girl's parents, Starboy's parents, and not Mon-El's parents. That should have been our first clue, right?
Oh.
Also, there's a Derlin that shows up, so that also should have been a clue.
Yeah, and, it is Ultra Boy's parents, his mother and father.
Mm-hmm. Krav Maga. And
Krav Maga, yeah.
Yeah.
And his wife, Myrtle. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Shrinking Violet's dad, Ken Barbie doll.
Yeah, is not really there at first, right? If I'm not mistaken, I have to go back and look at that page. But at first, you don't see him there until our villain attacks and he's like, aha, where is the other one? And then little Shrinking Violet's father's running around going, I am Doll Man.
He's the one in the purple tights on the
first okay.
Page,
all right.
He shrinks, yeah. And Shadow Lass's mother, which is interesting. Interestingly, we've actually met Krav and Mitra Na before.
Yeah, I was wondering who we had met before, because I know that Kravna has appeared in the Bendis run of the Legion, and he is totally different portrayed in the Bendis run of the Legion than what we have here. Here we have almost oddly creepy parents, right? Because it's like,
superheroes. They are literally drawn in 8-inch heels with, you know, massive barrel chests.
And so imagine, dear listeners, that your mom and dad show up to your workplace wearing their kinky sex bondage gear that they only wear on Saturday nights. And that's kind of how they look in this, like totally 70s. Let's go to Club 54 get it on with everybody. Free love, all that stuff. And it is kind of uncomfortable once you realize who these people are. So when have we seen Krav and Murda?
Krav and Mitra Na were in Superboy 208. They were hypnotized by the Legion of Supervillains. It was the first appearance of, you remember, Sun Emperor and Chameleon?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they hypnotized them and Superboy's parents and Mon-El's parents, sort of. It was a whole thing. But this is, I think, the last time we see them in this iteration. But when we saw them, they were chunkier and older looking, which makes me think that Krav showed up, saw all the cute girls in the Legion, and went, "Hey, maybe
time to upgrade to a new model."
Arne Digby, who sounds like an Archie character, has never been seen before this issue, and more importantly, will never be seen again.
Oh, okay.
The same with Tarna Tolarn, the mother of Shadow Lass.
Now, is that because they actually get different parents in the future, or there's just never a need to talk about their parents ever again? These two are such embarrassments to the pantheon of parents that they just are like, please do not come back.
Well, importantly, the Legion reboots in 1994, so there aren't really all that many stories in this iteration of the Legion left in the grand scheme of things. But this issue hit the stands February 26, 1980. The next time we see any Legion parents is probably another
post-crisis?
8 or 10 issues down the line.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there really aren't a whole lot of parent storylines to be had. There are a couple more parents who are going to die.
Uh-oh.
And I think eventually we do meet Dawnstar's mom and dad.
I seem to remember that as well, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, that's probably after the reboot. But I think I remember seeing her parents.
Crisis, but I don't think it's after the full on reboot.
Oh, okay. All right. And then, of course, we got Derlin mom, who could be anybody's mom. She could just, you know, she could look like your mom, but really be your aunt. And that really makes things weird.
Well, she is his aunt.
Oh, well, that does make it weird.
It does.
You think like when she and RJ Brand run into each other, there's a really awkward moment. Is she RJ Brand's sister or like aunt on the other side of the family? Or how do Derlins reproduce? Do they split apart and do that kind of stuff?
It's never really clear, but there seems to be a sexual component to it, because a male Derlin and a female Derlin are necessary to make children.
Is that spelled out specifically, or is it just one of those things where they choose their sex?
It's highly implied.
I wonder how did they handle Derlin's sexual orientation in the Bendis run? Did they just make it Derlins get to choose their sex, or is it assigned at birth?
I don't recall Chameleon Boy getting more than 2 or 3 panels of dialogue in that whole series. Hmm. So
we'll cover it eventually. So I'm sure we'll bring it up then. But I think Derlins would be the best representation of a species that would be able to decide on what sex they want at a certain age.
Or, you know, even on a certain day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Today I want to be
literally fluid.
So
gender fluid is just part of it. But this is G, and in future stories, they call her G Daggle, but that doesn't make sense because she's his sister-in-law and necessarily, you know, you figure wouldn't have the same family name.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But here's
it's spelled J-I instead of like G, like G-Dog. G-Daggle. Hey, yo, G-Daggle. What up, G-Daggle?
Yo. But yes, she is later revealed to be Chameleon Boy's aunt who raised him and his brother, Liggett, which is fun to say.
And is it because RJ Brand decided to go off and become a star maker?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
Wait, I'm sorry. That's a spoiler. Not yet.
We have talked about it enough. If this is your first time listening, hi, future person. Welcome. Join. Welcome to our little club.
1981.
Yeah. Hey, it's all coming up. And we've certainly talked about the reveal of who RJ Brand is in the future. But no sooner do they get done with the Hall of Heroes, which I wonder, I know we've talked about the Ultimate Sacrifice before, but this is one I can't remember if we've ever seen it in the book before as the actual words of the Ultimate Sacrifice.
I think, and I'd have to go back and check, but my brain wants to say that when Pharaoh Lad died,
yeah,
that the words Ultimate Sacrifice were used either okay. in the issue or immediately afterwards.
One of our fine listeners, and we've got a growing list of them following at Legion Clubhouse on Twitter, and of course just following us at Major Spoilers and at Mighty King Cobra, that you guys jump in and you guys have some great information that you're sharing. We certainly appreciate that. So if Ultimate Sacrifice has been used before in DC Comics, I'm sure it has, but I just want to know, because that's kind of one of those key phrases that you say in hushed tones, and certainly in the Hall of Heroes, that's what happens until Dagon the Avenger attacks. Oh, this is that Marvel DC crossover that people are waiting for. Too bad they have to wait for 1,000 years in the future for that that Marvel DC crossover event to happen.
Because he's an Avenger?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I feel that there's a more actually descriptive and, you know, honestly better name for this gentleman. I call him Darth Longhorn. Because he is clearly a Star Wars knockoff, and he has enormous Ibex horns.
By 1980, so I forget, I want to say it's late 1980 is when Empire Strikes Back comes out, but Empire Strikes Back and certainly Star Wars Fever is still at an all-time high here, especially when you know that there is another Star Wars movie, a second Star Wars movie. Oh my gosh, I wonder what's going to happen in this one. I wonder if Luke and Darth Vader will finally fight. I can see that kind of being a big deal. And I can see, especially with what's going on, with the Star Wars comic book, I could see some of that going on, there. Now the Star Wars comic book is over at Marvel. Conway or, Jimmy James didn't have anything to do with that Star Wars comic over at Marvel, did they?
No, I can't remember Jimmy James being a name that I see anywhere but on Legion and maybe some backup stories. And but Conway had
breakfast sausages.
Marvel by that point. No, you're thinking of Jimmy John's.
No, that's
he's
a sandwich
shop. Fast delivery.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of the sausages, the morning breakfast links.
No. You're thinking of the guy from News Radio who's played.
I haven't seen News Radio in decades, so I wouldn't even know which one you're talking about unless it's that one guy that takes horse dewormer.
No, he's the guy from what do you call it?
The Kids
from
in the Hall.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yeah.
this sign right there on the outline, and then
no. So for those of you that don't know, the Star Wars comics when they came out at Marvel, the comics came out and had to be done before the Star Wars movie was released, and so they were going off of early concept sketches in the very first four issues of the Star Wars comic. And so when you go back and look at that original Star Wars run over at Marvel, Darth Vader looks completely different. And in fact, he is presented as green in the comic because they didn't know he was going to be black, because I guess either the photos that they got were black and white or the concept art was green. And they're just like, well, I guess this guy's green. Let's color him green. So if you look at that also, very Star Wars cover from Marvel, that is that.
Well, it's also Carmine Infantino, and Carmine Infantino is not what we like to call a
team player.
I think he was a team player. I mean, he was DC's editor in chief, but I feel like he's not what you would call a literalist. He's not a realist heart. He's not, trying to give you an absolute thing.
So back to Dagon the Avenger. You know, Dagon is a very interesting name, and certainly for those of you today, Dagon is probably a name that pops up more often today than it would have in the 70s and 80s, and that's because of the resurgence of the Lovecraft mythos. Now, Dagon is one of the sea creatures from H.P. Lovecraft's mythos, H.P. Lovecraft being a horrendous racist, but in the 70s and early 80s, S.T. Josey, I mean, he wrote a biography about Lovecraft in the 60s. But then we also had all of Lovecraft's short stories that were in magazine form are now in the 70s starting to be collected in trade paperback, or not trade paperbacks, but in paperback collections. And so more people are aware of what the heck is a Dagon or Cthulhu or even the Necronomicon start to resurface in popular culture again because of the resurgence or the rediscovery of Lovecraft and his work some 50 years after, you know, after his passing. So I'm almost certain that Dagon is named such because of his influence from H.P. Lovecraft and not Dagon or D-A-G-A-N, which is the ancient Syrian god, which also is a kind of like serpent sea creature god.
Yeah, he was also a Semitic god. And the word, actually, I can't remember what it means, but there's actually a Hebrew word, Dagon, D-A-G-A-N. But the thing about Dagon that just really strikes me is he is so generic. I mean, he could have been a Marvel team-up villain. He could have been somebody fighting the Thing and Rom. There's nothing about him that makes him feel like a Legion character to me.
Right. Or a villain. Yeah.
I mean, I can see, you know, hey, I'm going to fight the Legion now. But if you look at him, his armor doesn't really, well, I will say this. Jimmy James, this is his first issue as the Legion's regular penciler. Mm-hmm. And he's still kind of getting used to the future. So his futurescapes don't really look all that futurey, but Dagon just looks like a guy. You know, he's got these weird pointy boots that I think are kind of interesting. But all in all, I look at Dagon and I'm just like, this looks like a guy that Spider-Man and Machine Man had to team up to take down in 1979.
Like the Silver Samurai, kind of a ripoff of the Silver Samurai, wouldn't come out. What? Silver Samurai is still, what, a couple of years away?
Silver Samurai, I think, is 1980, so it'd be the same year.
Time. Oh, interesting.
Silver Samurai's first appearance, if my brain is correct, is the one where Spider-Man met the Not Ready for Primetime players, and Silver Samurai fought John Belushi as, this is true, as the SNL Samurai in character.
And then Batman and Robin had to solve the mystery of who murdered someone on the David Letterman set. Which I think
I think Batman and Robin in that issue were giving cakes, beautiful cakes.
Well, what was the one where they went on? Wasn't there one where Batman and Robin went on Letterman to solve a crime?
I remember the Avengers being.
Oh, maybe it's the Avengers. Okay, so we're still over in Marvel territory. I'm trying to bring it back around to DC. Dagon also in his word usage is a little men's right activist in his flair. I think the thing that's missing here is a fedora and a few m'ladies as he's talking to his
you
captives
are an arrogant, treacherous woman.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, it is bad. And he puts the smackdown on all five parents.
Right. Because they kind of have powers, but you know, for them, it may not be powers that they've honed to the skill of being superheroes.
They all have, with the exception, actually, no. Only two of them have powers. G is a shapeshifter.
Right. And then Shrinking Violet's dad.
Shrinking Violet's dad, like all Imskians, can shrink. Also, interestingly, we find out that the Legionnaires have given their parents specific weapons. So Daddy Violet is running around with a gun, whereas Shrinking Violet doesn't carry a weapon. And I'm like, I understand wanting to protect your father, but maybe you should take a gun into battle yourself, Violet.
Yeah, that's a little weird, right? I mean, but maybe you do want to protect your parents. So it's like, here, Dad, here's a gun. The serial number has been rubbed off. If there's ever a problem, just say you took it from the guy who is trying to attack you, or else throw it in the river and you'll get away scot-free. Scot-free, also a DC reference there because of also probably a little bit of a
Mr. Miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
And we also find out something really weird, right on with your men's rights activist comment. Mm-hmm. Dagon thinks he's going to take down Shadow Lass's mom, but Shadow Mom kicks him in the face. And he's like, oh, she must have learned her fighting skills from someone. You surprise me. And I hate surprises.
Yeah, this guy is just. So then the other thing, too, is we'll find out more in issue two. Sure. But there are many times when we see a close-up of the face, of Dagon's face, that the eyes are drawn very feminine. And I don't know if that's intentional, because, again, we haven't found who's underneath the helmet. We right. kind of narrow it down by the second issue. But one of the suspects is a woman. And so I just wonder if the feminine feel of the eyes was intentional, or if that was something that was just accidental in trying to draw eyes behind these eye holes.
I would say accidental, because Dave Hunt, who inks this issue, is not the best inker for Jimmy Jane's Freaky Fast Delivery, because he really kind of overpowers. And we'll see in next issue and going forward, Jane's style is a lot different than what we're seeing in this first appearance here. And I feel like it's Hunt's inks that are doing it. So I'm wondering if it's just heavy inking behind the eye shields, but
yeah, it could be that. But I just initially I was like, oh, it's someone that could be perceived to be male from the way the costume is worn. But what if it was a female? Aha! We'll have to find out next episode of the Legion Clubhouse for sure. All the parents are kidnapped, and then the heroes come back and they're like, hey, why is the power turned off, and why is the security turned off, and oh look, here's this guy Tyrock. Where have you been? And he's like, man, things are going on back on my island. I need to get out of here. And they're like, you're a legionnaire and you're going to stay here, mister. And he's like, I don't care for your honky parents. I want to go do my thing, which will play a big role in the next issue. So got to stick around.
He does not say honky parents. Okay. Anyway, so the legionnaires are actually coming back from but it is a plot point, because they say somebody broadcast a fake message from the St. Croix Medical Center.
Yeah, which is where Brainiac 5 was
and where presumably Matter Eater Lad still is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you are correct. When they come back, Wildfire's like, listen, everybody, all hands on deck. And Tyrock's like, dudes, I got to go.
And then I didn't know that he had the ability to transport himself with his weird cries, because he starts to dematerialize. And Wildfire just like reaches his hand right through him. And I'm like, holy crap. He just reached his hand right through Tyrock's chest and burst out the other side. They just killed Tyrock. But no, he has this weird sound that he can apparently transport himself. I didn't know that was one of his powers, which is interesting, because, again, in the next issue, or maybe it is in this issue, Tyrock and Light Lass are wandering around and she's like, and so, yeah, that's how you save Christmas with your weird powers.
Light Lass also gets an interesting focus in this issue, because she's front and center in kind of a leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
She goes off with Tyrock, and then, you know, we come back and we find out what's going on. And she's the one who does the legwork to find out that Karate Kid's parents are also missing.
Yeah.
As are Sun Boy's, as are Wildfire's.
Yeah. And I was waiting for that one Legion member to just go, whew, good thing I don't have any parents.
Superboy's not in this one.
No, yeah, or mine. But.
Actually, the Rans twins have recently lost their parents.
Yeah, but their parents are already dead, so they don't have to worry about them.
Their parents died
like 20 years ago in
they
comic
did
terms.
Not. Don't you remember the story where Lightning Lord and Lightning Lad
they had
met?
They were there on the battlefield
their
graveyard.
Parents died in a car crash.
Yeah.
That also was maybe 8 years ago.
So the idea is, hey, we need to start tracking down where the parents are. Let's bring in Dawnstar. So Dawnstar shows up for a hot second in this issue as their tracker.
Saving Green Arrow from an asteroid.
And and she tries to track them down, and she's like, I can't find them anywhere. And I'm trying to think if this issue has the crazy QAnon guys in it or not.
Issue 263 ends with Dawnstar going, okay, we're going to try and track him down, and Tyrock walking out, and then Dagon going, $1 billion.
Oh, no, yeah. So at one point they go and they show up to, and they're like, hey, all of our science stuff has been turned off. Let's go see where our backup science stuff is at. And they go to this place where, you know, the science stuff and the security stuff is made. And this crazy guy there is like, don't you understand? Because everybody was focusing on your Legion Clubhouse, we got fired. It's our job that we, you know, it's your fault that we lost our jobs. And this is all your, and it was just going into crazy conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had said a long time ago when this whole RJ Brand lost his fortune thing came up, I said, this is probably something that they're going to continue to mine for future stories. It'd be interesting if there are other things that spin out of this. And we're continuing to see that happen to the point where I forget which Legion member is telling this crazy scientist guy, but the, you know, we didn't use any of RJ Brand's money. The government stole all his money. Didn't you read the newspaper? And he's like, I'm a Fox News person, damn it. And so then they just kind of dismiss this guy. And then all of a sudden at the end of the issue, as you said, Dagon shows up and says, I demand 1 billion solar credits. I want those billion Doge coins deposited into my crypto wallet by Monday or your parents are dead. Dead, I tell you.
I think it's Doge.
Yeah, but, well, whatever. That's how that issue ends.
Sure does bring
everybody
up
wants when, some Doge coins.
When Dawnstar pops up, I'm like, I literally forgot about Dawnstar. I mean, it feels like forever since we've seen Dawnstar in the book.
Shear's not really got any new hits at this point, so.
I guess, but, you know, Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves was big in 76.
Yeah, this is 1980, dude.
But yeah, that's not that long. I mean, we're talking about, hey, remember 2018?
Yeah, but no.
No, exactly. The thing about this issue that I find pleasant, positive, is that with the exception of Dagon, you know, being the villain and saying some things that can definitely be read as sexist.
I don't care if she's a Derlin.
The driving force of this issue is Shadow Lass's mom, who figures out how to leave a message for her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Light Lass, who does all of the legwork. She does the emotional legwork with Wildfire. She does the investigating. She really is almost the leader of the Legion throughout this mission. And then we get to a point where Dawnstar is the one that's going to have to track people down. And I'm just like, wow, you know, this is a lot of female centric mm-hmm. character stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe to make up for the fact that our villain is just basically a two-dimensional schmuck.
Yeah. There's some other things that, you know, oh, hey, everybody, look, it's Tyrok. Too bad he's going to disappear in the next issue.
But they don't know that.
Well, they don't know that.
You
got to
bring him back and establish him as a character before you can get rid of him. It's called The Bus Came Back.
Yeah, but so there's still kind of some problems that I see in the general storyline of things that have been introduced previously, but then kind of got dropped, like mm-hmm. the whole Imskian issue. Remember when the Imskians, like, they thought that the Federation was against them and everything? That never really got a resolution.
Right. And
And I have a feeling the same thing is going on with Tyrok, right? So we're going to see in the next issue, Tyrok is like, I must go back to my island. And right. then we find
my
out.
My home world needs me.
Yeah. And then something weird happens to him. And then I'm, you know, with the understanding that it'll probably be resolved in the next issue, but it's almost like we're trying to brush Tyrok out of the way again. So
that
I don't know.
Exactly what they're doing. And this issue and next issue are just set up to brush him under the rug, which comes later. But that is literally what these stories are designed to do. And I think that may be part of the reason why Dagon is such a two-dimensional pinhead, because basically his job is to be here and confuse the Legion so that Tyrok can stalk away.
Yeah.
Once again, he's, you know, very angry in this issue, but he's angry about his Legion duties. And then, of course, we get to the story that, you know, the Brigadoon Syndrome begins.
Yeah, which we'll talk about that here in just a second.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
So 1980, Matthew.
Yeah.
Big year. That was the year we ended up with Ronald Reagan as president. I wonder what the future would look like. Like, let's fast forward 1,000 years into the future, and we've already seen the president try to steal money from one of the richest people in the universe.
Yep.
What's the president of the United Federation of Planets and the Nine Planets ice cream parlor? What is that president up to in the future?
Well, the letter column of Legion 264 makes it clear when the issue didn't, that when we previously saw President Kandrew, boy, that's hard to say. President Kandrew, he was actually removed from office. So as of right now, Earth has no president.
No, I'm sure they have somebody in charge because, you know, the line of succession goes vice president. What is it? Speaker of the House, then like parliamentarian. And right, then eventually and then you go far enough down the line. And that's how you end up with King Ralph.
Right. You make it. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But this issue is vaguely important because the new Legion president is actually someone that we have met. The president who is about to replace Kandru, and I don't remember where, but this issue makes it clear that there is no president, but the new president is someone we know, someone we've seen, someone who thematically makes sense based on this issue, this two-part story about kidnapping Legionnaire parents.
Mm, let me guess, Matthew. Is it Marla?
No.
No. Because he would be my natural choice. I he's definitely down there in the King Ralph category of who was to seed in that line of succession. So
Marla is 794th in line after your mail carrier, my mail carrier, and Jerry Moran, I think.
Well, let's hope that that we can get to the mail carriers before Jerry Moran.
Legion of Superheroes number 264, Dagon's Cavern of Doom. Published June 1980. Written by Jerry Conway with art by Jimmy Janes. Synopsis: what is the terrible secret of Marzal Island?
All right, 264. Tyrox still in a tizzy. He has left to go back to his island. And so the idea is let's send... who are we sending? Saturn Girl
Light
and
Lass
Shadow Lass?
And Shadow.
Oh, Shadow Lass and
Light Lass,
Light Lass are both going to Tyrox.
Shadow Lass and Dawnstar, I'm sorry.
Okay, they're going to Tyrox Island to try and talk some sense into him and find out what's going on because they think that with his weird whistling powers that he might be able to find the parents because, you know, you remember because they talk about it as they're walking in media res. And so that's how you save Christmas by using your weird whistling powers to find the death probe. And Tyrox like, I got no time for you, woman. I got to do something. Get away from me. And
he doesn't whistle. He shouts.
Yeah.
Yeah. What he does. Okay. So if he wants to teleport, he goes, oh, wee, oh, wee, oh. And if he wants to swing through the jungles, he goes, oh, 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 oh. That's what happens.
Yeah. The problem I have with this issue is, does this arc know what it wants to be? On the one hand, it's trying to be a mystery of what happened to our parents. And so we're trying to have some of the dumbs of the Legion try to figure out what's going on. This is not the espionage squad, so they don't have all the brains that that would normally be in the smart group.
They don't even have anybody that I would be, you know, with the exception of maybe Saturn Girl, that I would consider to be top of the Legion.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that they're all dumb, but I'm just saying in the sense of let's solve a
Wildfire
mystery.
Wildfire is dumb. Wildfire is the thing I am.
In the let's solve a mystery, these are not the Legionnaires I would use to solve the mystery. So I don't know what this issue is trying to be. Is it trying to be let's race around the clock and follow the clues and see if we can find our parents? Or is this a what's the matter with Tyrox? Let's have a, you know, a very special... on this week's very special episode of the Legion of Superheroes, and we dive into Tyrox issues, or if it's something else completely. So I'm not really sure at this point what this arc wants to be, except that we have to take a look at how the other third of the Legion is handling themselves and what they're doing while the rest are out actually having exciting adventures.
I think to some degree, you were right when you said in 263 that this arc is designed to sweep Tyrox off the board.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Tyrox issues are front and center in a way that I feel like they really shouldn't be given the seriousness of, you know, the kidnapped parents. I mean, Wildfire is freaking out, melting things with his nuclear face because his parents have been kidnapped and
which he's got some crazy lines, right? So in the previous issue, he's like, if I had a heart, which I don't, I might care what you have to think, Tyrox. And then this one, he says, he's like, ah, I lost my head. And it's like, what is it, dude? Either you have a heart or you don't have a heart. You have a head or you don't have a head. At one point, as they're trying to find the parents, He opens up a door, and some missile or some explosion goes off and blows off his containment suit.
Yes.
And the panel for that one is just
hilarious.
So great. You know, it's just like, instead of saying frack or you know, some crazy thing Sprock. Like that, he's just like, oh, darn it all anyway.
Darn it all anyway. You know, and it's even funnier if you imagine Wildfire talking with the voice of Ned Flanders.
I guess it was just like, it is a weird dialogue. I'm not sure
it is.
I'm not sure Jerry Conway has a grasp of what the kids and their parents of these days are talking like.
I don't think that Jerry Conway has a hook on Wildfire other than he's the loud, angry guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of bothersome. Although this issue in 264 and 263 do establish that Wildfire has superhuman strength. Once again, for a long time, he's just been blasting things with his nuclear
energy.
But here,
yeah.
He's clearly ripping things apart.
This should have been like something to, you know, shock and surprise if I'm being exploded instead of, oh, darn it anyway.
Well, they can't do that because if he goes, ah, yee, that's going to teleport him back to Mars.
Well, no, that's Wildfire, not Tyrok. But you know, the other thing that is also mentioned in this issue is Tyrok is one of the more powerful Legion members.
Yeah.
Which, again, if you're going to point out that this guy is one of the top tier heroes, why has he been kept in the background all along? And of course, we know it's because he's got to stay on his island and deal with the unrest there. Or, as we find out at issue's end, when Dawnstar and Shadowlass won't get off the island, they're all snatched away to Brigadoon.
Ooh, yeah. The island of Marzal disappears from reality. For 200 years at a time.
I wonder, Brigadoon was a stage, you know, a stage play musical.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a movie. I want to say the movie was made in like the 60s.
54, I think.
54. So,
yeah,
I have no idea why in the 1980s Brigadoon would suddenly be a thing again. If there was some revival or something that was going on, but
book writers are old.
Well, but I mean, really, to set up Marzal as a Brigadoon type situation is really weird. And I'm not, unless there was some kind of a recall, you know, some kind of a resurgence of the musical. Now, I remember in middle school or it had to have been middle school, we went and saw like a local college do a performance of Brigadoon.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't imagine anywhere else that there would have been a big resurgence of this thing to where someone reading a comic would be going, oh my gosh, Brigadoon, I know all about this. And because they even call it out at the end of the issue, they're like, Schmigadoon or whatever that they say at the end of the issue.
We call it the Brigadoon syndrome.
Yeah, and it's just like weird, man. That is just like really weird.
Yeah, I think the musical is from the 40s. And there was a movie version in the 50s, but I don't know. The only thing that I can think of is that Tyrok's creator intentionally called it, because I can't remember if the whole phasing in. I feel like the whole phasing in and out of reality thing was part of his very first appearance back in whatever it was, 220 something something Dark Side.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, one of our listeners might be able to point that out and clarify that. It's not such a big deal, but it just feels odd that, hey, everybody, it's Tyrok. Yay, Tyrok's back. Oh, Tyrok's gone.
Yeah, I mean, he's had four meaningful appearances in the last 5 years of Legion Comics. His entire job in the big anniversary tabloid with the wedding was to stand guard at headquarters.
Yeah.
And he was in like three panels of a book that made a point of using every other Legionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that I want to see how this all plays out in the next issue. But anyway, back to the mystery. The trying to find our parents, which, I mean, I think these kids are trying a little bit too hard to find their parents. I mean, it's clear at least somebody in this issue has daddy issues. So in the process of trying to find their parents, they run into bats, but not just bats. It's mutant bats.
Space bats.
Some creepy mutant bats that pop like bubbles. So there's that.
Yes.
Then we narrowed down our list of QAnon suspects down to three. Two men and a woman. And they eliminate two of them and figure out that the man is one of the men is the one that's under the mask. And it's because they're all upset that they lost their jobs because there wasn't enough money to keep the research, the science and research arm of Brand Industries running. And so they all lost their jobs. So this must be the Legion's fault. So therefore, let's kidnap, torture, and kill the parents.
That makes no sense. And even worse, when they tell us the names of the possible suspects.
Yeah.
The name is Weasel Yondor. Weasel Yondor. Now, I don't know about you, but that name just screams out untrustworthy villain.
Isn't somebody trying to make a swipe at Frank Zappa and his kids?
I don't even know, but I'll tell you this. It's really nice that you can take Weasel Yondor and anagram it to Wily Zoo Nerd, which explains why he has horns like an ibex.
Yeah. Also, at one point, they're like, how did this guy get this costume? And it's like, duh, cosplay.
He made it himself for one.
Yeah, it's made out of foam and also, duct tape.
If you're bored, one of the other ones is Dr. Ula Rand, which is Rad Earnlad.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Anyway, that's how bad this issue was. I was literally making anagrams out of the names.
Yeah, and so the issue ends where they realize that, oh, they've been hiding in plain sight all along down in our bunker because one of the things that was stolen were some plans that we had to create an emergency underground bunker if we were ever attacked. We never made that announcement, and we never moved that product out of R&D into development. So therefore, the only place that our parents can be is down in the beneath the Legion clubhouse.
In the basement.
In the sub basement.
Yeah, and this story really goes through some convolutions to make Tyrok's powers the important powers, because literally it's a tracking gig.
Yeah.
But the girl with the tracking powers, she can't
do it because there's something interfering with her powers.
Yeah, molecular instability zone all around the spacecraft. You're stuck here.
Yeah.
I just. I will say this. There is an important wildfire development in this issue.
Oh, yeah.
We find that Wildfire now, when divorced from his suit, as he was in his first appearance, back in Superboy and the Legion of Behavior. Sorry.
Ah, darn it all, anyway.
He's learned to vibrate the air with his energy so that he can now be heard. So when he's a floating cloud of energy.
When he is a floating cloud of energy, is he not putting everyone at risk with his radiation contamination? Is he irradiating his fellow members? Like dosing them with high radioactive levels of toxic energies?
I don't know that he's radioactive. He's actually antimatter.
Oh, okay. So
they may be in danger of exploding.
Yeah.
But I don't know that
you can't mix antimatter and matter, Captain.
Well, and here's also something, Dr. Solar, impression. Man of the Atom in the 60s, had complete control of his radioactive powers.
Yeah, but he's at a different publisher.
For radiation. So,
okay.
I feel like if you're going to have a guy walking around in a polyester leisure suit, he's going to be no more dangerous outside of his polyester leisure. That's a bad metaphor.
Yeah, I don't know. This issue is just fair, at least. Again, it doesn't know really what it wants to be. And trying to tie the previous issue with this issue together, everybody's reunited with their parents, hooray. But at the same time, it's jumping through, as you said, a lot of hoops to get to where they're going. And the big reveal of the villain and what's going on with Tyrok just seemed kind of like, just seemed like afterthoughts.
Really? I mean, the battle with the villain, once they find him, it's literally a panel. Mm-hmm. Lightning Lad busts in.
It's like,
ha, how could you get here? And Lightning Lad hits him with a bolt of lightning and he's gone.
It's that. Remember that one issue with the giant brain? And it's like all of a sudden they bust in and it's this giant panel of like body horror monsters all over the place. And then the very next panel is like, woof, we defeated him. And it's like, what? What happened? Yeah, that's kind of how this
was like. And now we are leaving for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Legion is in the basement. Tyrok is back on Marzal. Two Legionnaires are trapped with him. And in one panel, they actually either miscolor Tasmia's mother or they give one of her word balloons to Ultra Boy's mother. Mm-hmm, but, boy.
Hey, 80s comics, am I right?
I do want to point out page 12.
Okay.
Page 12, I think, is the point where, you know, we've talked about Saturn Girl's costume being a bikini before.
Yeah.
But page 12, if I was, you know, a 10-year-old boy, as I would have been in June of 1980, and I bought this book and I saw the reverse view of Saturn Girl in her pink pleather bikini, I mean, that might have knocked me right out of boyhood and into adultery, if you know what I mean. That's a picture. I don't know. On the one hand, I'm like, how did they get away with that? It's DC in the 1980s. And then I realized she's been wearing this costume for like 6 years.
Yeah. Great.
Very naked Legion is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Thanks for making it creepy.
I didn't want to make it creepy. I'm just saying that picture is just like, wow, put some clothes on, Saturn Girl.
We have come to the end of another Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what have we learned this week?
We've learned that Green Arrow exists in the 30th century.
I think we also learned that you don't have to curse to utter your amazement and disdain for what has happened to your containment suit.
And we've also learned that if someone is about to crash into a building, apparently ripping it in half with your gravity powers is a completely legitimate technique to save lives.
Oh, man, I forgot about that chase scene. Ugh. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us this time on the Legion Clubhouse. We do enjoy all of your comments, all of your messages. You're such wonderful, wonderful fans out there. Please spread the word. If you're enjoying the show as much as we are and you want to, we would love to have even more people listening to the show and joining in on the conversation. So please spread the word. Let people know about it. Join our Discord. We have a channel specifically for Legion Clubhouse that you can come in and talk in there. So there's some good people in there. I think Jimbo Fett found us through Legion Clubhouse. So the more people we can get, the better we can grow and be and create a really good, strong community of Legion of Superheroes fans. And maybe some of you might want to make sure that the show continues by chipping in a few bucks a month. A couple of bucks a month is all we ask. And you can find out more at our Patreon page at patreon.com/majorspoilers. So until next time, I'm Wiley Zoonerd.
And I'm Rad Earnlad.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.